Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Now we have to talk about something that has become really, really something. In fact, I believe there is even a potential shortage, because we wanted to talk about a drink that has taken over cafes, kitchens, social media, as well as wellness feeds. Now, it's been a while, so it could be that we're a bit late to this party, but I wanted to talk about matcha. Once a centuries-old part of a Japanese tea ceremony, matcha is now showing up in lattes and smoothies and desserts. And apparently, Mukundi, even in face masks. Yeah, exactly. So I have no idea. It's green and it is a pick-me-up. I happen actually when I first tasted it, I found it a bit bitter. And, now I enjoy it a little bit more. I've never tried a face mask, that said. To help us make sense of this trend, the flavor and the culture, as well as the hype, we are joined by Jess Bonin. She is a tea student, an entrepreneur, a certified tea sommelier, she is well qualified to talk about this. Jess, good morning. Thank you.
Good morning.
For joining us. So people like me who hadn't really tasted it before, what exactly is matcha, and how does it differ, let's say, from green tea or regular tea?
So matcha translates as ground green tea. So it is actually a green tea. But
wow. Okay. Now I've already learned something.
So what makes it so special, particularly the matcha that comes from Japan, is that it is shade grown for a few weeks, which changes the entire chemistry of the leaf or how the photosynthesis happens. And this causes a more brittle leaf, which we call tencha. Then once they've harvested the leaf, this tencha then gets processed in a certain way where the actual stalks and veins are removed and you get what I would call the meat of the leaf, which they then stone ground traditionally. And this is what creates a very fine powder. So it's also very high in antioxidants. People say that it's 10 times the amount of one cup of green tea. And as you mentioned, it's traditionally used in ceremonial practices, as has been for a couple of centuries. And it was brought in from China. Well, tea was brought from China to Japan. And at the time, this is how tea was processed. It then moved into full leaf. But Japan has really taken the grinding of the matcha into a whole other level. And you shouldn't get too much bitterness, but it's sort of famous for its umami or seaweed type flavor.
When something becomes a trend, there's always this danger that it becomes either just copied or not real. We see this with wasabi, for example.
Yes.
That when we think we're eating wasabi, I think it's pretty much horseradish and food coloring. But how do we know if our matcha is matcha and if it's good quality?
Well, you don't. Unfortunately, there's no regulating body inside or outside of Japan that can actually classify or qualify the quality. So there was a Western attempt to define matcha's quality, and it was separated into ceremonial and culinary. Mm-hmm. But you have a scale of different quality within each of those, and sometimes they cross over. And it's really up to, there's certain parameters that define a ceremonial, and that is how long it's shade grown for, the type of leaf that's used, and so on and so forth. But because there's no regulating body, anyone can claim anything. And this is what we're seeing happening at the moment.
So
just to give you context, only about 10% of all matcha produced is actually ceremonial. And yet, if you look across the world, everyone is claiming they are selling ceremonial matcha. Most of it isn't even matcha that comes from Japan, which isn't necessarily a problem, because with a trend like this and such a finite resource that matcha is, given it's coming from a very small island, there's room to, get from China, who've also been doing it in their own way for a while, and South Korea. But the problem is very few brands are being transparent about what it is that they're selling. And this is very much what's causing the mass shortage and basically the what I think an impending crash that is coming. I mean, this year we had, I was watching the auctions live because I've been importing matcha. I actually introduced matcha into the country in 2013.
Wow.
Yeah, and we had the first brand. I was the first to do lattes. I mean, obviously it was in traditional circles before, but in terms of commercial. So I've watched this thing sort of absolutely catapult in the last few years. And it's caused huge issues in the industry. And this year we went up 30%, which is completely unheard of in terms of a price increase because of the shortage. And there is very little ceremonial even available, and yet people are still buying and, you know, claiming that they're selling ceremonial, and people are getting taken advantage of. And the thing is, ceremonial is not supposed to be used for a latte. Culinary is designed for a latte. So you're losing out on very key flavors if you are using a ceremonial, whereas a culinary has a particular bitterness and balance of flavor that works with the creaminess of a milk or a milk alternative, where you actually get a better flavor profile if you're using a good culinary. We don't want to use a terrible culinary. So it's trying to find the balance, but because everybody's riding this wave, you know, they just want to be able to try. I think at some places you can pay 120 rand for a latte,
which
is just absolutely
crazy.
Ludicrous.
Yes, somebody told me, and I have no idea if it's true or not, that obviously because it's tea and it's green tea, the there is a caffeine content, but it releases slower into your system. It doesn't do that same spike, give you that same spike that let's say an espresso does. Is that true?
100%. So the caffeine that you, while if you had to measure sort of per leaf compared to a bean of coffee, you're going to find more caffeine in a tea leaf, but you use a lot less tea leaves per cup. But what works so well with tea in terms of how it doesn't become an adrenal stimulant in the same way that coffee is, in other words, you're not going to get that peak and crash because it's not putting your body into fight or flight. The high chlorophyll content actually regulates the release of the caffeine, and it works more on like a cellular or a muscular level, and, you know, increases oxygen absorption, and that sort of gives you more of the energy. But that's also why it's not hitting your adrenals in the same way. And then you've also got L-theanine, which is the amino acid in there, which basically regulates the part of your brain that energizes you and the part of your brain that calms you. So you get this paradoxical effect.
Amazing.
Where you're simultaneously calm and energized. And this is why it was incorporated hundreds of years ago into meditative practices. So it sort of moved from being a medicine and a high-end, you know, luxury item into something that actually birthed sages who created all these ceremonies around it because of these physiological effects.
Incredible. And the bridge from, let's say, lattes and culinary to things like face masks, like to, you know, is that all? And beauty products, is that? Just hype. I can hear, I mean, by the answer think you think I, it is.
Yeah, for me, it's pretty much hype. I mean, look, you know, you're still going to get antioxidants and amino acids, but part of the draw to the matcha is that you're consuming the whole leaf. Whereas if you're steeping something, you're getting an extract.
Right.
So this is part of the benefit. So using the matcha in, you know, look, I haven't done the science behind it, but. It just seems unnecessary to me. To me, it just seems like another trend. It's just people trying to ride the wave. And I mean, I've even seen certain brands claiming that they've got ceremonial matcha in their face mask. And I'm like, it's impossible. It's just not possible. So yeah, I can't get on board all of that, especially when you're looking at a finite resource. I think that if you, you know, maybe it's coming from somewhere else, it makes more sense. But yeah, I don't know.
Very, very interesting.
Touchy.
Yeah, I can hear that. But a final question before we need to let you go. Do you think that this is a, you know, you mentioned a bubble. Do you think that this is a trend that's going to continue? Or do you think that this will be, because it's become so popular, that it will move in the wrong direction?
I think it will move in the wrong direction until it has a little bit of a bubble burst. I mean, that's just sort of basic systems thinking theory. You know, it has to at some point, if you know, things are always looking for a homeostasis. So it's going to burst in one way or another. Unfortunately, you're going to see a lot of brands then collapse as a result, because you know they're building their brand on something that is impossible to sort of sustain. Resource. And as as customers become more discerning, and this is a lot of what I've been trying to do, is educate people to have that discernment. They're going to be demanding certain quality, or they're going to be making better choices, and then it's not going to be as competitive as it is. So eventually it's going to crash. I mean, at some point, Japan themselves consume between 50% and 70% of all matcha produced.
Right.
So the rest of that 30% to 50% is being distributed around the world. It just can't
sustain itself. Jess Bonin, we do need to leave it there. Unfortunately, she's an entrepreneur, she's a sommelier and a matcha expert.